Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers, having found you guilty, 10 years.
What? Come on.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now, here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. Thank you for tuning in. And again, I'd like to extend our congratulations and thanks to all the folk who've been writing us, calling in, emailing us from all over the world. This has really been amazing that we're getting an international audience on this show. And the station in general, WPFW, has grown and expanded to a worldwide listenership. So thank you for your support on Crossroads. Today, we're dealing with a couple of topics. Are drug overdoses, are drug overdose deaths increasing in D.C.? And we have a special guest who will be joining us shortly, the former First Lady, or the First Lady for Life, Ms. Cora Masters Barry, the widow of Marion Barry. And she'll be joining us shortly with important information that you need to tune into. But before we start, we open up with what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. The grapevine. Oh, Hey. D.C. has spent over $30 million on migrant crisis in the past year. Information obtained by News 4 showed that the new Office of Migrant Services has done and how the district has spent tens of millions of dollars, almost a year since D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser declared the influx of buses carrying migrants from Texas and Arizona an emergency and launched the D.C. Office of Migrant Services. That office still has only one full-time employee. And Mark Seagrove's report from Channel 4 that the D.C. has spent more than $30 million dealing with the crisis in the past year. And in the mayor's new budget, we haven't seen anything in there about drug abuse, drug addiction, the homeless, the returning citizens, or our seniors. We're being, again, ignored and disregarded again. The other big winners in the election are private prisons. The GEO Group was the single biggest winner in the U.S. stock market among companies of any size when they heard the news that Trump has won the election. Donald Trump's win has sent private prisons company stocks soaring as investors anticipate that the president-elect's promise of mass deportation will increase the need for immigration detention. Stocks for GEO Group and CoreCivic, the nation's largest private prison operators, increased 42% and 29% respectively last week. Financial news site Sherwood concluded that GEO Group was the single biggest winner in the U.S. stock market. The GEO Group was built for this unique moment, said the GEO president, George Foley. Foley also noted that, according to the HuffPost, that GEO Group is well-positioned to scale up its ICE detention bed count from 13,500 to more than 40,000. Contracts with federal, state, and local governments, which include 85,000 beds, could also be redirected toward federal needs. There will likely be a scramble for beds, he said, and we believe the ICE will have the top priority on all available beds. If Trump goes through with his policy of deporting thousands of migrants, all of them have to be held and detained in detention facilities, which is where CoreCivic and GEO Group comes in. They own or operate some of the largest private prisons and private detention facilities in the country, and they were waiting on Trump. So there are some winners in this, and the losers would be, who do you think would be detained in the facilities? Being convicted of a crime has thousands of consequences besides incarceration, and some last a lifetime. at least 77 million U.S. adults have criminal records, 77 million, including 7 million currently in prison or jail or on probation or parole. So that's 84 million. Typically, more than 10,000 of the incarcerated leave prison and nearly 200,000 churn through jails every week. But because more than 64,000 inmates and workers have become infected with the COVID virus so far, killing hundreds, some incarcerated people are being released. Like most formerly incarcerated people, reconnected with loved ones is a priority. And at least 1,000 of these restrictions relate to housing. In some cities, the police can order landlords to evict tenants simply because they suspect criminal behavior. In Cayuga County, Ohio, 80% of Section 8 rental properties can ban applicants with felony conviction. At least 1,000 of these restrictions related to housing. And this shows you what we are in store for. Also, President Biden has less than 60 days left in office, about 60. And there's two things he can do right away that Donald Trump pardoned 235 people during his term in the last White House presidency. In his last week in the White House, he pardoned 135. Biden can pardon a few hundred folks in his last week, as many as he wants to. Also, President Biden has submitted 30 applications, nominations for federal judgeships, and they've been pending and pending. And he's trying to rush these 30 federal judgeships through before Donald Trump take over office. Folks, this is a mess that we're involved in, and I hope that things really pick up. Also, overdose deaths are rising among Black and Indigenous Americans. Experts say responses such as mobile and mail order safety supplies are needed. The recent decline in overdose deaths hides a tremendous disparity by race. Deaths have fallen only among white people, while continuing to rise among people of color, according to a new state analysis of federal data. In all, nearly 5,000 more people of color died from overdoses in 2023 than in 21, while deaths among white people dropped by more than 6,000, according to analysis of provisional data from the Federal Center for Disease and Control. And folks, that has been what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. Thank you for listening. And now we get to the most important part of our show. We have a young lady joining us in a couple of minutes, Ms. Cora Masters. Okay, good morning. We have our guests on right now, Ms. Cora Masters-Berry, the First Lady of D.C. Good morning, Cora.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. It's so good to be on this great getting up morning.
And who you telling? And Merry Christmas to you, lady.
Always,
how you doing?
Always.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. I'm excited about Saturday and the feedback from the people. They seem to be energized for it.
Well, we've heard quite a few people talking about they wanted to be there. Can you explain what's going on this Saturday, November 23rd?
Well, first of all, November 23rd, Saturday, is exactly 10 years since Marion left us. She died on a Saturday, November 23rd. So this marks the 10th of his passing, if you can believe it. And to acknowledge that, but also to help that be something that's informative, instructive, and positive for the community, we're unveiling a mural, not of Marion himself only, but of the contribution, the 40 years of service as an elected official to the city. They're often, you know, we know that Marion is beloved by many of the residents of the city. Their children and their children and their parents and grandparents love them. But there are many people who didn't know a lot about what he's done. And then there are people who live in this city, many, many, who know nothing about him, just his name. And so when you have an incident like the disrespectful treatment of him and his legacy by the company and pizza, then people will pick up on that, and that's all they know. And so it's fortuitous that this unfortunate, horrible incident with Ampisa comes on the dawn of the unveiling, it's a blessing, yes, in the sense, yes, that it'll illuminate that people need to know more. So this mural comes as a result of them naming the building during COVID, and I think 21 or 22, the Marion Barry building, and instead of having a likeness of him in the building, which is nice, but everybody knows what he looks like, we decided to tell the story of what he's done, the real live things that are, yes, manifestation, yes, of him. When you walk down 7th Street and you go into the Capitol Arena, it's because of Marion Barry that Capitol Arena is there. Or if you go down to U Street and enjoy U Street, the reason U Street is vibrant is because Marion insisted on putting the Reed Center there. If you go to Georgetown Waterfront and enjoy yourself, Marion developed that. And I could go on and on, but a lot of people don't know that. They know very little. So the mural just sort of gives them and a sense of not everything, because he had a big life and he made a lot of contributions, but we looked at five pillars of the things that people know the most and that was infected. And we just, a young group of black artists called Creative Junk Food won the bid to do the mural. And so they've worked for 2 years, just about 2 years, to put it up. So I hope that people will learn from it and enjoy it and be educated by it.
How big is it? You said it took 2 years. It must be quite a mural. How big is it?
Well, you know, if you've ever been in the building, and you have been because I've been there with you, 441, when you first walk in, it's a big old marble wall. And they had three panels up there of anonymous, random people doing something. I don't know what it was. So up on that wall, there's going to be three panels. And these three panels will speak to big vision, big impact, big legacy.
Right. Well, let me ask you, with copies of this mural, can people purchase a copy of this or make get a replica of it? Or was it just necessary to be the owner?
I cannot believe you said that. That is absolutely the greatest. You just made a recommendation that I'm going to get off this call and say, let's do some replicas of this.
That's
a great idea.
That's right.
Because with the mural is also a, yes, first of all, there's a QR. There's going to be, you know, we have to meet, you and I, we've been around a long time, so we have to be up with the technology.
Right.
So there's going to be a QR code that you hit that, and then not only does the mural come up, but it will also give you the explanation, because many people will look up there and not know what they're looking at. But the kiosk, they're going to have kiosks in the building that you can look, and it shows the timeline. So you'll know that the picture up there with him in the shovel is him and a pole and breaking ground for the Capitol Arena, which at that time was the MCI Arena. Or you may look over there and see a picture of Carol Thompson Cole, who was the first woman, and as it turned out, the only woman city manager. And it speaks to the fact that Marion appointed so many women in high positions that women didn't traditionally hold and did not hold at all anywhere else in the country, like the city manager, you know. So it's those kind of things. It's an education, and it's, you know, and it you know, for us old timers, it reminds us of the days when we had the Marion Barrys and our some of our former mayors, some of our Bob Moore, who was housing director, and who came up with first time home building, and we have Charlene Jude Jarvis, and some of those were helped with Marion to build the arena. So it's just it starts with a picture of him and Ivanhoe Donaldson and James Foreman, because those Ivanhoe Donaldson was the architect of Marion's political career. A lot of people have forgotten that. But if you were around, you know that was the case.
I remember Ivanhoe real well.
Yeah,
he was something else.
That's right. And he's the one who was the architect of Marion's political career from the beginning. People don't know that. They thought it was Marion by himself. It was never Marion by himself. Marion had the vision. But in order to execute that vision, he had to have buy-in and support from many people in this city.
You know, Cole, there's some things that Myron did that very few people are aware of. When he started the Office of Returning Citizens,
That's 26 states
now have saw the need of having a returning citizen in the executive branch of the government. And Myron started that back there in 94. He also was the first mayor that appointed returning citizens to the parole board. Myron did some innovative, creative things that are still being replicated all over this country.
And I'm hoping that this mural will spur people's interest to look into a lot of those. See, everybody said, well, like you just said, he did the returning citizen. That was huge. But you know, they'll say, well, why isn't that up there? Well, we had to make some choices, you know, because some things are a subset of other things. Like Marion, you know, the one of the greatest things he did, obviously, it was the summer job struggle. We all know about that. But the other thing was he did was minority contracting. In order to do business in this city, 30%, 33% of their contracts had to go to African Americans, and people had generational wealth that they built from that kind of a policy.
Right. You're right. He's quite a man. And I miss him, Cole. I don't miss him as much as you do, but I miss him. I'm telling you.
I miss him personally, but that's not important. What I miss for him is for the city and for people. I hear it all the time. People almost ache because the days when you had somebody that they think that his only goal was to empower the people and his people, they feel like that's missing now. And I say to them, it is missing because the times have changed. You know, a lot of the things that Marion were able to do, if he were mayor today, he would not be able to do.
Yes.
Because, you know,
go ahead.
We couldn't empower black people now like we could then. Now it's diversity and it's people of color and it's minorities.
And a whole lot of juggy boogie. And a whole lot of juggy boogie because Marion kept it real. He kept it real.
He kept it real and he kept it focused because he knew that we had a long journey in this country and we had to do some catch up. Okay. And that was his dedication. I always tell people, Marion's whole life was shaped by his years growing up in Memphis, Tennessee. His whole life was shaped by the fact that he could only go to the zoo on Thursday. His whole life was shaped by the fact that the only job as a black boy that he could get was delivering papers to the black community. The economic impact and the equity or the inequality of not being able to go to the zoo shaped his philosophy on justice and economic empowerment.
I know. I love him, Cole. I mean, when I went through a lot of stuff with the media, and Myron was the only one in this city who stood by me when everybody turned their back. And I mean, we went to federal court and he spoke about my head. So I love him like a brother and always will, and I miss him.
That we can get people to join us. I mean, we need people there. I hope people will come. Put your coat on. It's going to be a little chilly, but it's going to be great. We're going to have a great show. We're going to have young people. We're going to have Easy Street, who's going to be our DJ musical director. We're going to have a young up and coming singer, Jatar, to speak and sing. And it's going to be very entertaining. And it's going to be 45 minutes. And come on in and get some coffee and see the mural. And I hope they come pay homage. I'm looking forward to people joining us.
So what time would that be, Cole, for Saturday?
Everybody's gathering at 11 o'clock.
11 o'clock at 441 4th Street. That's the former, we're talking to Cora Mastersbury, the former First Lady. To me, she's the First Lady for life. And this is the Myron Barry Jr. Legacy Foundation announces the official unveiling of the Myron Barry Jr. Mural Saturday, November the 23rd, 2024, at the Myron Barry Jr. building. That's at 441 4th Street. People come out, support him. He elevated this whole community, our consciousness. He increased the black middle class and made a lot of people extremely wealthy. But more than that, Myron treated everybody as a human being. I don't care who you was. He was a people's person. And his wife is following up in his footsteps. Now take my hat off to you, Cole, for keeping his man, his name, his memory, and his legacy alive. You are a force to be reckoned with, Cole, and I appreciate you. We need you. And anybody that's listening to this show, come out this Saturday, November the 23rd, at 11 o'clock at 441 4th Street for this unveiling, the official unveiling of the Marion Barry Jr. Mural. And it starts at 11 o'clock. And please, 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 I'm begging you. This is my man, my buddy, my friend, and ain't nobody like Marion. And we, anything we can do to repay or return his kindness and support, we need to do that. So we, all those is listening, show up, show out, and turn out for the unveiling of the official Marion Barry legacy. And you've been listening to Core Masters Barry, the first former First Lady for life here in Washington, D.C. You want to give us some closing remarks before you leave, Core?
Yes, I just want everybody to lift him up, and I lift all you all up in prayer. And when we have people who come in our community and disrespect our leaders in our community at AMPISA, I want to thank you all for standing up against us.
Thank you, Core. You've been listening to Core Masters Barry. She's quite a lady, the former First Lady for life, along with Marion Barry. And this is the official unveiling of the Marion Barry Jr. Mural, Saturday, November 23rd at the Marion Barry Jr. Building, 441 4th Street Northwest. Thank you, Core. Thank our listeners, and we hope to see all of you down there this Saturday for the unveiling of the official Marion Barry Mural. And Core, I want to, we're talking about that later. I want to see Marion Barry have a chair at Howard University or one of the historic Black colleges. They should have a political science chair at several of the major Black historical Black colleges, because this man has left some footprints that nobody will ever be able to fill. Thank you, Core, for joining us.
I'll see you for sure, Roach, okay?
You'll see me, sir, and Merry Christmas to you and Ramon.
All right, dear.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay. Now we get to the other part of the show is with Dr. Edwin Chapman. You know, I met this guy about a year ago. I never got so close and respect somebody so much, because this is a medical doctor who's on the front line trying to do whatever he can for addicts, for recovery, substance abuse. I understand that Dr. Chapman, he wears me out. I thought I was the Energizer Buddy, but this doctor is the Energizer Buddy. Every time I turn around, Dr. Chapman is giving a speech. He's been rewarded for this, and he's always speaking up for the least, the laws, and those folks who are dealing with substance abuse, overdose, recovery, trying to find housing, jobs. And he rolls up his sleeve and gets right into the mix. I don't know how you do it, but you my favorite doctor. When I get sick, I ain't coming to you, because I know you gonna talk me to death, Doc. Good morning, Dr. Edwin Chapman. Hello, Dr. Chapman, are you there? Hey, we're waiting on Dr. Chapman. Unmute your phone, Doc.
Hi, Roach. I'm
okay.
Here.
Okay. You know how to do this stuff. You've been doing this long enough. You've been sitting there with your with your phone asleep. Are you awoke?
No, I'm wide awake. Somebody was trying to call me at the same time, and I had to get them off the phone.
Okay. Good morning, and thank you for joining us, Doc.
And thank you for having me.
Because we're talking about the drug overdose crisis in Washington, D.C., and at the beginning of the show, I mentioned that the death rate for Black overdose in this city is increasing. In fact, D.C. is leading the country, if I'm not mistaken, in overdose fentanyl deaths. And you on the front line, Doc. I've been to your office several times. You right there, and you got people outside all around you, behind you, in the alley and everywhere. You go out and deal with everybody that you see, Doc. I mean, it's... We need 100 more Dr. Edwin Chapmans. What's your take on how many drug overdoses are happening in Washington, D.C., and what need to be done, and what are you doing about it, Doc?
So, Roach, let me just give you a little background. As Cora just said, we didn't do this by ourselves. This was really a result of an education over time, and that education for me started at home with my parents.
Yeah.
But coming to Washington, D.C. and Howard University was a blessing back in the 60s. And one of my first instructors as a freshman was Dr. Nathan Hare.
Yes,
and Nathan Hare, if you don't know, eventually became the father of Black studies. But he sacrificed himself at Howard. Back in the 60s, he brought Muhammad Ali many revolutionaries to the university. And he was actually fired for some of the things that he said. When I got to medical school in psychiatry, I had Dr. Francis Welting. So this prepared me for what we're seeing today. And the fact that we're in an era where we're really seeing medicine being weaponized. The whole fact that we don't have universal health care started right after the Civil War, because the feeling was that slaves didn't need white man's medicine. So we bring that forward to today, and we can see what Donald Trump and others are trying to do in taking away the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare. So this has impacted us across the board, particularly showing up during COVID. We realized how important housing was. We realized how important having a job. We realized how important having health insurance, because our people died disproportionately during COVID. But underneath that was the opioid epidemic, which has been with us since the 60s. And that, too, exacerbated during the COVID epidemic. So in 2023, we had 522 opioid overdose deaths in the District of Columbia.
Last year,
which makes us number two behind West Virginia. So that's the picture that we have. And it was disproportionately Black men. So Black men, you could say, have been targeted, not just here, but across the country.
Why is that happening like this? What do you think? What are some of the contributing factors to this overdose increase in D.C.?
So if you really study the teachings of Francis Welting and others, Black males were always the target. And it's approached in different ways. So you don't have to go out and necessarily lock somebody up. Now you can use healthcare as a weapon to destroy communities. And that's what we're seeing. That's what this is all about. That's why Trump is able to put people in place who are really focused on taking away health care. Because our folks were always incarcerated as treatment. Treatment for substance abuse did not become a medical problem until it disproportionately affected white communities.
You know what? I'm looking at something, Doctor. There are 10 programs that could be on the government efficiency chopping block, and Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk are partners that President Donald Trump plan on spending. They're on a spending panel, and Ramaswamy floated on a social media proposal to eliminate programs that Congress funds, but where specific spending authorization has lapsed. That may sound like an easy source of savings, but it would axe veteran healthcare programs, drug research and development, opiate addiction, and it even went so far as to say that Ramaswamy has pledged not to bring a chisel to government spending, but rather a chainsaw. So he and Elon Musk are talking about destroying healthcare, all kinds of drug program, drug research, development, opiate addiction and treatment. What's your take on this? What do you think from what Ramaswamy and Elon Musk have said they would do once they get in office?
So I think we have to look at the campaign that was just run. And that campaign was run on a series of lies. We call it in the medical community cognitive dissonance. How we always use these big terms, but if you want to break it down to something simple, you could just call it pimping or being a con artist. That's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a master con artist. And this terminology is linked to other factors. Another medical term is the Dunning-Kruger effect, meaning that many times the people who are listening to this con artist don't know what they don't know. And so they accept it as fact. I'm going to give you a quote from Lyndon Johnson back in 1965, and I think that summarizes everything. If you can convince the lowest white man he's better than the best colored man, he won't notice you're picking his pocket. Hell, yes. Give him somebody to look down on, and he'll empty his pockets for you. That's mm-hmm. what we just witnessed in the election. We witnessed a master con artist convince poor white folks and some black folks that he's going to save America. And that's, you know, that's what we're dealing with. So once you get that basis, we know how to fight that. You know, we know you and I have been around. I've been around almost 80 years. This is nothing new. You know, I understand what racism, white supremacy looks like because I was trained in medical school and undergrad school to deal with it.
Okay, you know, Doctor, one of the things that hit me is that D.C. has a drug overdose rate nearly 97% higher than the U.S. overall. That's in 2022. The overdose death rate in Washington, D.C. was 97% higher than the U.S. rate overall in 2022, and it's getting higher. What can we do with what I just said about what Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy will be doing with this new government agency that Trump is charging with? They're talking about cutting $500 billion in funds for social welfare programs. What the hell are we going to do? If we got a crisis now with overdose and people ain't got homeless, they don't have no place to stay. There's nothing like, I think you and I talked a few months ago, Doc, about this new policy that came down from Medicare and Medicaid, that anybody that received an operation inside of a hospital and they are discharged, they cannot be readmitted to the hospital for that existing illness because of the new rules in Medicaid. They can go back to the hospital for another illness, but not for the one they were previously admitted to. Then they're released to the streets with nowhere to go, no shelters, no homes. And we were talking about respite houses or someplace short-term convalescence. All this is going to be thrown back by the wayside, Doc. What the hell? What do we do with this new administration? They said they're not coming with that with an axe. They're coming with a chainsaw to cut these programs out of existence. What's your take on this, Doc?
So again, I think all politics is local. We need to start with our local government. We need to make sure that we have a mayor and city council that sees housing as health care. 80% of health outcomes are related to things that happen outside of the hospital and the doctor's office. So it's much easier and much cheaper to take care of somebody who has a roof over their head.
That's right.
You and I have talked about this. We know where there is housing in this city that's available. And
that's
we have
right.
forced the system to put money in those resources. And then when somebody comes out of the hospital, or if we find someone homeless on the street and they're willing to go into housing, that we can place them in that housing, and then we can provide the medical services that they need. That saves on criminal costs. It saves on so-called tertiary medical costs, where people no longer have to go to the emergency room because they got hit by a car or got pneumonia sleeping on the streets. All of those costs go down. And so we call that a loss mitigation model. We know how to take $100,000 and make it $50,000. We can save the government $50,000 by doing that.
We're going to take a break right now. This is WPFW 89.3 FM. You're listening to Crossroads. We're dealing with criminal justice and medical issues this morning with Dr. Edwin Chapman. If you have a question or comment, the phone number to call is 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. I think we have one caller on the line right now. Doc, do we have a caller? Go ahead, we're taking. Question or comment, please. Hello? Question or comment? Well, I guess it's gone. All right, we go back to Doc. Doc, if you were the mayor of this great city and you understand the drug problem, the overdose problem, the homelessness, the helplessness of people in recovery, What would you do if you was the mayor?
Again, I would open up. I would open up the hotels or buy some of these empty, brand new apartment buildings. Now there is a discussion about turning office buildings downtown into housing, but that's going to take a long time. We have brand new housing. I'm looking out my window here on Bay Road at brand new high rises that are empty. And all the city has to do is either buy it or take it over, and we can fill it up with the homeless, with the returning citizens, with people coming out of the hospital that need respite care. And we have the people in the community that know how to secure those facilities, and we have the medical experts that can take care of those patients. Just think about a Howard University Medical School, Nursing School, Georgetown, George Washington students. That would be an excellent opportunity for them to come in and triage these people and get them the services that they need. So we have all the resources we need. We just need a reorganization with a plan.
Okay, we'll take another caller. You're on the air, please. Question or comment?
Roach, this is Rick Barco from Germany, man.
How you doing, Rick?
I hear the doctor talking, but I think Howard University will survive the first 4 years of the second term of Donald Trump. But poor people, drug-addicted people, homeless people may not survive. Trump has an attitude towards the addicted, the disabled, and people he believes are downright ugly. He believes that they should just go away. They should be left to die. What do you say to this, Doc?
Go ahead, Dr. Chapman.
Well, that's exactly what we saw during the COVID epidemic. First, he denied that it even existed. And then after we had hundreds of thousands of people to die, he did not initially provide money for the supplies that were needed, would not initially take a vaccination. And remember, when he did get COVID and came out of the hospital, he wouldn't wear a mask. He went back to the White House. So all of those messages that he sent were the messages that his followers picked up. Again, those are examples of cognitive dissonance, where people do things that are against their best interests, and they're teaching the public the wrong thing. So we just saw a whole campaign full of lies, and they're not ashamed of it. You know, they call it alternative facts. So what they've actually done is thrown science out of the window, and that's why they're looking at these government agencies where you do have experts and trying to shut them down, because they don't want truth and knowledge on the table, because truth and knowledge will beat these lies into the ground.
You know, one of the things that just popped in my mind is more people with substance abuse problems in the various stages of recovery, trying to get their life back together. And you got housing, which is a crucial, as you said before. You've identified, Doc, some properties that can be used immediately that the city will buy it. But if the city can spend $30 million to relocate and assist migrants, and no money has been designated for recovering addicts, homelessness, returning citizens, and you got folk coming out of prison. We just found out something else, Doc, that a lot of men who've been released after 30, 40, 50 years in prison are resorting to drugs, not because they want them, because they're out of desperation or hopelessness. They have no home, all their relatives are dead. They have no contact. They go to the neighborhood, and the neighborhood is not even there. They don't know nobody in the city. So they are depressed, frustrated, and they turn in. So the death rate for those men and women coming out of institutions is on the increase. And they are included in the numbers that we're talking about for these overdoses. So a lot of folks are just overdosing because they're tired. They can't go through no more. So what is it that I know what we can do, because you and I, we've been meeting every week with 15, 20, 30 different organizational leaders to see what we could do to combat some of this. And you've been at every meeting. I've never seen you miss a meeting, Doc. I take my hat off to you, but the bottom line is, what can we do for those folk who are listening? And we got a serious overdose problem in Washington. We got a housing problem. We got an employment problem. The employment rate for returning citizens is over 65 to 70%. If you got 10 returning citizens, six or seven don't have a job. You can't find a possibility of one. So we want to make sure that we do whatever we can to get the information out, and Dr. Chapman is on the front line of doing this. How does it look, Doctor, to get these apartment buildings down the street from you?
So Roach, the first thing we need to do is have an administration that will not spend $515 million on a sports arena for housing a soccer,
sports team,
a basketball team, and a hockey team.
Yeah.
That money could be used for housing, and that's where you have to start. We have the money, we have the resources, but they have to be allocated in a manner that benefits the community and not a billionaire.
You know, we've been discussing this with Dr. Chapman and Dr. Udu, the director of the Returning Citizens Division of MedStar. And we all know that the need for housing. We've identified housing. There are houses we can put up right now. And in fact, I met with the government of the mayor's people 5 years ago about installing or building container apartments on existing lots. It's not brick and mortar, but we can put up housing a lot quicker. In 3 to 6 months, we can have 75 to 100 unit building put up for those folks in need, for respite care, for the homeless, for the returning citizens, recovering addicts, respite care. We can do this. We have identified this. But as you said, we got the horses, but we don't have the resources. We need help to take care of this problem. And they can spend $500 million for sports, $30 million for migrants, people not even from the city. And we got one of the largest returning citizens population in the country. And you couple that with the overdose rate of fentanyl and opiates killing our folks. What the hell do we have to do? We keep asking and asking and asking. We got the horses, but we don't have the resources. And when you go to people, previously, Doc, you heard Cor Masters Burry say about what Marion Burry did when he was a mayor. This would have never happened under his administration. We had a house that we called the Marion Burry House. We wanted to open up a house and name a transitional respite house after the former mayor. And all we run into is jiggy boogie. This jiggy boogie, that jiggy boogie. And it's frustrating, and people are dying. They are dying. So while we're talking right now, Dr. Chapman gets so many phone calls that you got to go out, people overdosing on the streets, sidewalks, on the buses, inside of McDonald's. You got to go and give them knock-on. This thing is off the chain. And we call, and they say, we're scheduled a meeting in 3 weeks. If my house is on fire and I call 911, don't come to my house and tell me we got to have a meeting before we cut the hoses on to put your fire out. This is what we're dealing with. We got an emergency. And this man, Dr. Chapman, Dr. Wu-Wu-Du from the MedStar, these gentlemen, I've never seen doctors like this to get all roll of this sleeve and get in the community. And you can see them after 5 o'clock, 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. They in the community. So it ain't about somebody who's committed. Their action speaks louder than words. So do we have any more calls, Mike? Okay.
Well, one thing I would like to say is that since
she's turning the mic on, it was on.
Okay, is that better? One thing I would like to say is this T. Rump, with all his convictions and charges, still got elected. One thing that needs to happen immediately is that ban the box that's on every application needs to be immediately removed. That question shouldn't be asked of anyone anymore.
You know, it's a whole lot of that. Hey, Doc, what do you think we need right now? What can we do? I was willing to consider climbing up on that big chair. Peter Green, before he died, he rode the bicycle, tricycle down Martin Luther King Avenue. He's talking about going up on the big chair. We've been talking about one of us or somebody. Well, I'll go up if need be to sit on that big chair on Martin Luther King Avenue until we get some health care, until we get some housing and some commitments. I don't want to hear no more. I went to this school, I got to get this university, and I'm a doctor. That's jiggy boogie. We need people who can deliver on the ground, people who can deliver action. And this is what we talked about. When we come to you people with these kind of shows, this ain't because we like it. I don't like these kind of shows. People are hurting. People are dying. And a lot of them I know or don't know, but even if I don't, they are dying and they're human beings and they should have an opportunity to live their life out accordingly. So what else? So,
Rooks, let me just give you two other examples. We can make treatment for opioid addiction free. So anybody that needs treatment can get treatment, just like in Europe, you can get methadone or buprenorphine free. That's number one. Number two, you have to give patients the right dose of medicine. We told the district government 9 years ago that the dose of buprenorphine or fentanyl was too low. And we did studies and proved it. It took 9 years. Just 2 months ago, NIDA, the National Institutes of Drug Abuse, accepted the findings that we made 9 years ago. So we had a number of patients to die, got the wrong dose of medicine. Not just here, but nationally. And that's because the FDA had said that doses above 24 milligrams were not effective. And we were using doses up to 32 milligrams, and we proved it through the Howard University College of Pharmacy. So again, our frontline knowledge and the fact that we're there and we're seeing things before others is what we call DEI or diversity, equity, and inclusion. And when you don't pay attention to the experts in your own community that have the information, then the whole community suffers. This impact nationally is worse than Tuskegee when you look at the numbers, because our folks are dying all across the country.
There you go. Yes. Yes. You know, I'm looking at something that about this expiring 10 programs that could be on the government efficiency chopping block with Elon Musk and Vivek Rajaswamy. And right at the top of the page, Doc, is drug development and opiate addiction treatment, $48 billion. They're going to cut it. Housing assistance, $37 billion. They're going to cut it. Educational spending, $29 billion. Healthcare, $22 billion. We're talking about, if we think the problems are out of control now with these proposed budget cuts that's being proposed by this new administration, by Elon Musk and by Vivek Rajaswamy, we're looking at, I don't know what word to describe a catastrophe that turned into a disaster, and the disaster turns back into a catastrophe. So we're dealing with crises within crises that keep overlapping. And with this new administration, folks, you're gonna have people sleeping in front of your door, Doc, on the sidewalk. They're gonna be sleeping on your stairway. They ain't got nowhere else to go.
So Roach, that might be a blessing in disguise. Suppose we take all those folks that are sleeping in the parks and sleeping in the streets and put them on one of those, a couple of those bridges that lead into the city. Mm-hmm. You can shut the government down. You won't be able, nobody will be able to come to work. Trump can helicopter in, but none of his folks will be able to get in. Again, we have resources because we are in the nation's capital. And we need to look at the leverage that we have. On the good side, we can show them how to do this. Yes. What you just described with housing and healthcare, we can show the rest of the country the demonstration model of how to take care of everybody for less. And it's very simple, but we have to get these insurance companies, these for-profit insurance companies, out of the picture, because we're dealing with criminals. And we can show the Commonwealth Fund just published a study 2 months ago that showed that out of 10 industrialized countries, the United States is 10th in terms of health delivery, but number one in terms of cost. So we spend a lot of money, but we don't. But our outcomes are terrible, and that's because we have these crooked insurance companies that are taking all the money. And believe me, the leaders of those companies are all, for the most part, Trump's people.
Yeah. You know, our time is running out, Doc. You want to give us some closing remarks? We got a couple of minutes, Doc. Give us some closing remarks, please.
So I think, again, we're part of a number of organizations, including an organization called CRUSE.
Yes.
Communities.
Yes.
Respecting everyone's will to survive. The optimistic gentlemen and ladies, and then
Iron Watch,
that I'll let you introduce because you were founder of that. But you know, my job is to give the medical expertise, but we need everybody at the table.
There
we need
you
businessmen.
Go.
We
there
need
you go.
With lived experience. As the best teachers for the next generation. Those are the people that can tell you what not to do in life because they've learned, and we're in touch with everybody.
Okay, thank you. I want to say, I guess it's been Dr. Edwin Chapman. We've been talking about the drug or drug overdose deaths increasing in D.C. And prior to that, we had the First Lady Forever, Coal Master Barry, Myron Barry's widow, on. And we're dealing with all aspects of our community. And I just want to say that, Dr. Chapman, you mentioned CRUSE. We've been meeting every week. We got like 25 or 35 nonprofit community leaders, and we're meeting. In fact, right after this meeting, I got to go to Ben's Chili Bowl. We got to meet with Kamal Ali, Kenny Barnes, Tyrone Park, and them folks. And we're doing whatever we can to get people involved, all hands on deck. Folks, this is not a joke. This is not a fun or a party. We're dealing with life-death situations to save people's lives. And when you got people who are risking their life to help save life, we got to reach out and support it. If Myron Barry was still alive, we wouldn't be talking, having this conversation, Doc. Myron looked out for the little person, the least, the lost, and the less of us. So we don't have that kind of government that's coming back to us right now. So I just want to say thank you, Dr. Edwin Chapman, and I will see you later in the meeting today or even tomorrow. I see you almost more than I see my wife, man. You know, I don't mean that. I'm just joking, Doc. I see her every day. Thanks a lot, Dr. Edwin Chapman, for joining us, and we'll be bringing you back. And don't forget, we got another group called Your New Beginnings that's a part of this. Optimistic Gentlemen and Ladies, Parent Watch, all hands on deck. Let's all get involved. We got several organizations. We need your help, people. I'm leaving here and going to Ben's Chili Bowl for a meeting at 12 o'clock. So if you want to join us there, we meet 3-4 times a week. People, this is serious. I want to thank Dr. Chapman, and we're going to have you back because the problem with overdose deaths is scary. I see young kids dying overdosing. We got to do something, people. You don't have to know them. They are human beings. And if you want somebody to help you, we got to help somebody else. And as the Bible said, when you do this for the least of those, you do it for me. See you next week. Merry Christmas. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Thank you.
Skin. Run, 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 but you sure can't hide. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Vote for me and I'll set you free. Rap on, brother, rap on. Well, the only person talking about love, man, brother, is the preacher. And it seems nobody's interested in learning but the teacher. Segregation, determination, demonstration, integration, aggravation, humiliation, obligation to my nation. All the children. That's what the world is today. Hey. The sale of pills are at an all-time high.
pushing gun control to sound so. Shooting rockets to the moon, kids growing up too soon. Politicians say more taxes will solve everything.